evam kṣipaṁ dhanuṣi santi tamut sasajja. Bhānam savajram iva tadridhayam bhibeda. Sosnik vaman dasat mukter nyapatad vimanad. Dhadheti jalpati jane sukriti varipta. Evam, in this way, Kṣipaṁ, chastising Ravana, Dhanuṣi, on the bow, Santitam, fixed an arrow, Utsasarja, released towards him, Bhānam, the arrow, Sa, that arrow, vajramiva, like a thunderbolt, tadhridayam, the heart of Ravana, vibheda, pierced, sa, he, Ravana, asrik, blood, vaman, vomiting, dashamukhaihi, through the ten mouths, nyapatat, fell down, vimanat, from his airplane, haha, alas, what happened, iti, thus, jalpati, roaring, jane, when all the people present there, Sukriti Iva, like a pious man. Rikta, when the results of his pious activities are finished. Translation. Lord Ramachandra said to Ravana, "You are the most abominable of the man-eaters. Indeed, you are like their stool. You resemble a dog. For as a dog steals edibles from the kitchen in the absence of the householder, in my absence you kidnap my wife, Sita Devi. Therefore, as Yamaraj punishes sinful men, I shall also punish you. You are most abominable, sinful, and shameless. Today, therefore, I, whose attempt never fails, shall punish you." After thus rebuking Ravana, Lord Ramachandra fixed an arrow to his bow, aimed at Ravana, and released the arrow, which pierced Ravana's heart like a thunderbolt. Upon seeing this, Ravana's followers raised a tumultuous sound, crying, "Alas, alas! What has happened? What has happened?" As Ravana, vomiting blood from his ten mouths, fell from his airplane, just as a pious man falls to the earth from the heavenly planets, when the results of his pious activities are exhausted. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 9.21, it is said, Kṣine punye marcha lokam viśanti. When the results of their pious activities are exhausted, those who have enjoyed in the heavenly planets fall again to the earth. End quote. The fruit of activities of this material world are such that whether one acts piously or impiously, one must remain within the material world according to different conditions. For neither pious nor impious actions can relieve one from Maya's clutches of repeated birth and death. Somehow or other, Ravana was raised to an exalted position as the king of a great kingdom with all material opulences. But because of his sinful act of kidnapping Mother Sita, all the results of his pious activities were destroyed. If one offends an exalted personality, especially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one certainly becomes most abominable. Bereft of the results of pious activities, one must fall down like Ravana and other demons. It is therefore advised that one transcend both pious and impious activities and remain in the pure state of freedom from all designations. Sarvapati vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam. When one is fixed in devotional service, he is above the material platform. On the material platform, there are higher and lower positions. But when one is above the material platform, he is always fixed in a spiritual position. Sadhunan samatityayatan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. Ravana, or those like him, may be very powerful and opulent in this material world, but theirs is not a secure position, because, after all, they are bound by the results of their karma. Karmana daiva netrena. We should not forget that we are completely dependent on the laws of nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. Bhagavad Gita 3:27. One should not be proud of one's exalted position and act like Ravana, thinking oneself independent of material nature's laws. So today is when Lord Ramachandra then defeated Ravana, chastised him. And this day also it's famous for its ability to be able to be victorious over the enemies. So in the same way, then, we see Durga is also used the same day for performing her activities of defeating the Moishasura. So Ramachandra comes to establish the religious principles. He himself is the perfect follower of these religious principles. And being that perfect follower, he sets the perfect example. So the ideal of how to perform activities that they're based always on religious principles, this is set by Lord Ramachandra. So Ravana, somehow or another, has, Prabhupada mentioned, has come to this exalted position of having a great kingdom, having so many opulences. But he miscalculates that because of this opulence, that it is due to his own ability, rather than it's because of following properly God's laws. Because he was famous for his ability and performance of yajñas and other such activities. As a Brahmin, he did things very perfectly. When he would offer a yajña, then when he'd offer the final offering, the Purnahuti, Agni himself would personally come with his wife to accept the offering, because everything was done so perfectly. We never really hear of many other occasions where Agni himself personally comes. But Ravana was one such person who this would happen. So his qualifications, you could say, on the material platform, was very great. Therefore, he is classified as a, you know, properly situated Brahmana. But at the same time, is that the point is missed that rules come from God. Right? We see in the purports here that Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that religion means to follow the laws of God. So now, if you understand that they're God's laws, then it's real religion. Then it's Sanatana Dharma. If one doesn't understand they're God's laws, but one follows the laws of God, then you're considered pious. You know, a nice guy in the material world. If you don't follow God's laws, you're impious or sinful. Right? So this also leaves a subtle element that means if you don't understand the laws of God are coming from God, and therefore you follow them, that also is an impiety. And there is, because the result of impiety means it keeps you in a lower position. So the results of the impiety of not following God's laws and knowing they're God's laws is that you stay in the material world. even though you may be following the laws, so therefore you're considered pious within the material consideration, and you have a better position than someone who doesn't follow them, who is in a lower position. But in any case, as Prabhupada points out, you're still in the material world. You didn't get out. So Ravana here is then, it's very apt, he's falling, as someone falling from the heavenly planets when their pious activities are finished, that Ravana had so much material facility, material prestige, that those pious credits were finished. And now he fell from that position to something lower. But now others, is that the piety just runs out. You go to the heavenly planets, you perform the activities that residents of the heavenly planets perform, and having done that, the credit's out, and then you come back. But in this case, Ravana has done activities that are against the Lord's position. He's stolen Sita Devi. He's insulted the Lord. He's directly gone against the Lord. Doing this, then, that would mean whatever pious activities are there, they're immediately removed. So then, at a premature time, he fell from his position. Otherwise, if Ravana hadn't stolen Sita, then, you know, there's a good, he would have continued as the king of Lanka, right? So, the important element here is this connection with the Lord, is that one is following the Lord's orders, not because they're just rules, but because they're the Lord's desire. There's the Lord's rules. Following the Lord's rules, then one attains the ultimate pious credits, which is going back to Godhead, going to the spiritual world. Otherwise, then, if one is simply following because they're rules, one will get the material benefit that accrues. But not being in devotion to the Lord, one will not get the credit on that platform. So there are also pious persons in the material world that know they're God's laws. And they follow them because they're the superior laws, but they're not following them to please God. They're following them for the benefits they'll get from following them. Right? Or that they consider themselves, they identify themselves as a pious person who behaves nicely, does everything correctly, does everything right. And because of that, then they will naturally follow religion. They'll do everything properly. And so they'll get the material results of that. And they will have a good position. And they'll, you know, enjoy material facility. But they won't obtain to the Lord. Because their purpose is not to please the Lord by following God's laws. Right? So these subtle distinctions are made so that we always are aware we're God conscious. And that God conscious is favorable towards God. That's what makes it devotional. Because otherwise one could say at this moment, you know, this historical moment when Ramachandra is standing before Ravana and making these comments about his behavior, how he's going to chastise him, one can be extremely confident that Ravana was totally God conscious. Because God was standing in front of him, insulting him and saying he's going to kill him. Right? So I'm sure he didn't miss that one, you know. He didn't, was thinking of something else. Hey, did I turn off the water heater, you know, or, you know, like that. You know, he was fully conscious, but his consciousness was not favorable towards Ramachandra. Because we notice Ramachandra said the things, then he put his arrow. Then he aimed, then he fired. So in that time, Ravana could have surrendered. He could have said, you know, and now I realize my mistake. Right? Taking shelter of the Lord. That opportunity was given. He did not take it. Why? Because Prabhupada says, that's the disqualification of the Rakshasas. right? They don't understand the Lord's position. They think, I'm the one that makes everything happen. They don't think God makes it happen. So here, then he could have understood God is the supreme controller. I tried, I gave it my best shot, but it didn't work. So now I should surrender to the Lord. But he didn't. He's still thinking, he would be thinking, how can I get out of this? What would be my plan? Because he's been on the battlefield before. That's why he's the king of a great kingdom. And everyone in the universe leaves him alone. Right? Because no one can defeat him. So he's still thinking, how am I going to be successful? So he didn't surrender. So his God consciousness, therefore, wasn't very useful. It wasn't, as Rupa Goswami said, favorable to the Supreme Lord. And it definitely wasn't free from karma and jnana, that we can say. Right? So it didn't qualify as devotional service. So what we see is that Ramachandra has come to set this example, but this example is not just being a good person and following the Vedic rules and regulations, following the Vedic literatures, the culture, the philosophy. It is following it in relationship to the Lord, being conscious of the Lord. Because if you look at it, Ramachandra is following all the rules perfectly. But from it, what do we discuss? We don't just discuss how important it is to follow the rules. We discuss Lord Ramachandra. Right? If someone's reading Ramayana, then when they make comments, the comments are about Lord Ramachandra. So one becomes aware of the person who the rules and regulations are meant to... By following the rules and regulations, one's meant to be conscious of. Right? So he sets the example, and in setting the example, we become absorbed in the Lord. So here, perfectly, the two get combined. Right? But based on the platform of following the rules and regulations. Right? So, that's important because in the conditioned state, then there's a necessity of regulation. There's a necessity of organizing our life according to the Lord's direction. Because otherwise, then what will be the basis of that direction? Right? One could say just absorption in the Lord, which is a good answer. And if one is doing that, that is very excellent. But if one is not doing that, then what's the position? If one's not conscious of God and not following the laws, one doesn't get anything. Right? Ravana, up to a point, follows God's laws. He got so much. Right? So if you're wanting to be practical materially, you have to give Ravana credit. Right? And Ravana is out on this battlefield. There's a good chance he's wearing a dhoti, you know, and a chadar. Right? He's following the rules of warfare given in the Shastras. Right? Right, that's his comment about Ramachandra. How can I fight with this guy who's come with a load of monkeys? You know, he has no chariot. He claims to be a Kshatriya. He's a Kshatriya of the Ikshvaku dynasty, which is very famous. Right? But he has no chariot. How can I fight with this guy? Why, what are these mundane considerations based on? The Vedic literature. So then it's arranged that a chariot is arranged and everything, the demigods bring a chariot, and then he's comfortable to fight with him. Right? Because otherwise, it's just, you know, it's no show. He just turns around, goes back into his palace and closes the door, and then what do you do? Right? So, for everything to be, he's following the rules. Because of that, he's successful. Wherever he's not successful, that's where he's not following a rule. Right? So he's kidnapped Sita. That's not following the rules. Right? That's where his misfortune lies. Right? His misfortune doesn't lie in that every day he comes to his court, he sits with his ministers, he makes decisions on his kingdom, and all. That's not where his misfortune lies. In fact, his city is made of gold. Right? That's why when Hanuman lit it on fire, it burned for so long. Because gold burns the longest. Otherwise, it would have just been a big fire and that, and then it goes out. But it burned for 7 days because of the gold. Right? So that's a lot of gold. You know, that's not just little, a spoon here, or, a little ring there, a nose pin, or maybe some leaf that they've put on some highlights on, a little bit of plaster. You know? This is gold, a lot of gold. A city of gold. Right? It was Kuvera's city. Right? And Ravana decided one day he was going to live there, not Kuvera. Right? I don't think Kuvera was overly pleased, but what can you do? Right? Ravana is a bigger... He's a Rakshasa. Kuvera is only a Yaksha. So they're powerful, but not as powerful as Rakshasas. So Rakshasa wins. Right? But the opulence is there because of what he did properly. But because it's his performance of those activities were not in connection with God, therefore he only ended up with a mundane result and mundane consciousness. Therefore, when faced with God and the opportunity to actually interact with God or surrender to God, he didn't take it. Because his material consciousness is so nicely developed. Right? You understand? We're only saying this for that slight little in the background on some and right in the foreground in others, of that gnawing thing that, you know, you have to be materially expert to make it in the world. But I guarantee you, materially, there's no one on this planet now that was as successful as Ramachandra, as Ravana was. Right? Or anyone else who followed the Vedic culture nicely. There's no one. So the idea that you can be successful in God's world, you can do it without following God's laws, one has to take it that one is very misfortunate and very unintelligent, no matter what your friends say. Very unintelligent. So the point here is that one has to follow God's laws and to be successful. But then why go to the, and to follow the law, whether one is God conscious or not, or whether one is devotional or not, the endeavor is the same. Right? It's just like if you go into your kitchen and cook lunch. Now whether you cook it not being conscious of God, or being devotional, or just being completely you're hungry and you just want something to eat. Is there any difference in the endeavor? Does it take any more time? Does it take more time to boil rice for Krishna than it does to boil it just for yourself? No, it takes the same amount of time. So the point is if you're going to be successful, you're going to have to follow God's laws. And following God's laws, it's no more endeavor to be God conscious and to make it favorable to Krishna. There's no more endeavor. Your mind is already there. It's already thinking of a million things. It can also think of Krishna. It just wants to do something. Right? You know, that's the example given of that story of the genie in the bottle. Right? So at the end, the genie has to do something. That's his dharma. Right? So then they say, okay, see this pole? You go up to the top. And when you get to the top, you go to the bottom. When you get to the bottom, you go to the top. And you just keep doing that. And they kept the genie busy. So the genie didn't bother the man. So then the analogy is defined that the mind is like that genie. It has to do something. It can do something very nice or it can just bother you. So keep it engaged in the Lord's service. So it's going to be thinking of something, either mundane or not. So better it's not. But the activity will remain exactly the same. There is no difference. This idea that modern man has the monopoly on successful action and results is a concept for those who are not God conscious. That's all. Because God conscious means you're conscious of God in everything. So if you can't see God in action and reaction in the world, and that action and reaction is based on His laws, that means you're not actually as intelligent as you think you are. In fact, the Shastras will go as far as to say, you're a fool. Right? And I don't mean fool here in Bengali, meaning a flower or something. I mean, you know, someone who is misjudged. Fool doesn't mean idiot. That would be the term I'd use. But the Shastras will say fool means that you can be very intelligent, but it's wrongly applied. So that's foolish. Right? So that would be just like someone's very good at driving. They're very expert. They're driving down the road, but they don't have a map. So they don't know where they're going, so they take the wrong turn. That's foolish. They could have had a map. They could have known where they're going. It doesn't mean they're materially unqualified. It just means their material qualification can't be appreciated. It can't be used. Right? So it has no use, so that's foolish. So Ravana's qualification could not be used on a higher level. And unfortunately, because he stole God's wife, now he's dealing with the Lord's energy on God's level, directly, personally. So that means he'll have to deal directly and personally with God. So then he did not become God conscious. When he's not dealing directly with God, he's just dealing with his external energy. Then, you know, you can think you're the Lord of the material energy as long as you follow God's laws on how to deal with the material energy. Right? This is the point. You're never the Lord of the material energy. But if you follow God's laws, then no one complains that you think like that. Right? Just like, let's say, you have a very successful person. Extremely successful. Now, if he has a bit of ego, no one really complains. Right? Someone who's not very good had the same ego, everyone would go, you know, what's his deal? But if he's very expert and he has some ego, everyone will basically let it go because he's doing something. So that's how it works. Where does that come from? Why do we do that? Because God does like that. Right? The material energy does like that. You follow God's laws in dealing with material energy, then you get the good results. Now, if you claim these are my results and I did this, then they kind of leave it. It's false ego. It's not real. It's not true. But it's left. You're respected for that. He's very powerful. He's respected for his power. He has money. He's respected for that. He has knowledge. He's respected for that. Right? So all these people will say are foolish if you actually personally meet them. Then you have to deal with them nicely. Why? Because they are representing God's potency in these areas. Right? So Ravana is a powerful man. And Ramachandra is dealing with him according to that position of power. Right? I mean, he could have just sent in all the monkeys and said, you know, go get him, you know, like that. But he didn't, because he's acting like a kshatriya, he's acting like a king, and all this is obtained because of following God's laws. So he's dealt with on this planet. He's respected as a king. But where he's wrong, therefore he's dealt with like that, then he's mentioned that he means Ramachandra could have shot him first and then made all these comments. No, he makes the comments and then he shoots him. Right? So that proper respect is there. That proper dealings are there. But it's short. Right? It's short of the ideal. The ideal is that it's connected to Krishna. And so that is, for the soul, is a very obtainable goal. Because God is the ideal. So therefore, following the laws of God to please God is the perfect ideal for the living entity. It's not something that's unobtainable. Right? So we see here is that he's taken the materialism to its extreme, but then not understood or respected, you know, the source of all that opulence. All that opulence and everything that he's enjoying, he doesn't understand it comes from the Lord. And so to try to steal the Lord's opulence that's connected directly to the Lord, that's a problem. Okay. Any questions or comments? Yes. All success comes from bhakti. Why do we say? You think we shouldn't say or something? How does all success come from bhakti? Because bhakti means following God's laws on the highest platform. Because, in other words, you follow a rule that, you know, what is that rule? What's established that rule? Right? You establish the rule, okay, so at least you have a consistency, you know? And if you're smart enough, then if the rule works, you continue to follow. If the rule doesn't work, you don't follow it. But by the law of averages, if you keep consistency to something that does work, that on an average, you probably will do pretty good. Right? Because the point is regulation creates improvement. You know what I'm saying? So if somebody always does something in a particular way, there'll be times when if he had done it a different way, he would have been more successful. But the point is if he sticks to what he does, he will be successful because just by just the cycle of how things work, some of the times the fortune will fall on his activity. Does that make sense? So, therefore, you know, he'll be successful. Now, then when he takes that this is from something higher, it's something set by a social system, right, or from a governance, then it will go to something greater than his purview of things, his personal. It will have a better effect on the greater social, you know, in other words, the element of just trying to work within the, in cooperation with others. It'll have more success. Everyone, you know. And higher than that is if one follows actually from the Shastra the laws that are given there according to the nature of the living entities in the world, the nature of the world, God, like this. But it's not specifically God conscious, but it's God's laws and it's accepted that Shastra is correct. Therefore, whether one knows it comes from God or not, in any case, you're going to follow it. Right? So by following that, then you're working on the laws and how inherently the universe functions in its complete method. Because otherwise, local social laws or customs may work in that locale for that people, but they may not work for another people or in a different situation. Right? You know what I mean? In other words, take something like consumerism works fabulous in America. Right, but it doesn't necessarily seem to work so good for everybody else on the planet. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because it works really well there, but for them to be good consumers means everybody else has to be exploited. Right? So that's following a local customer law. Right? Local mentality. But Dharma means you're following the laws that govern the universe. So then if you follow that, it will be good for you and it will be good for everybody else. So that means everybody else can be prosperous. Right? And because everybody's working together for prosperity, there's actually more prosperity. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like this. Let us say your local culture somewhere is prosperous. So the items it will produce will be of good quality. No? So now if someone from another culture comes there and obtains that, they'll have some quality goods. Right? And so this way, both cultures are flourishing. Right? Now if you work out that I can get a little bit more by dealing with this other culture so that I can take more from them, then you may now get something more, but in the long run, you'll get less because the quality of the goods they produce will be less. So even though you have gotten something and made good profit, what you have isn't actually worth very much. Does that make sense? So, but on the universal platform, then everyone can be prosperous. That's the interesting thing about Dharma. Everyone can be prosperous. Well, in the modern concept, for some to be prosperous means someone else is not prosperous. Does that make sense? Like that. Because if material energy is pleased, she produces opulence. If she's not pleased, she doesn't. So whatever's there, you can fight over it. That's the difference between the two approaches. So then your endeavor will work on a higher platform. Now if you take it greater than that, you see that by performing the activity without a desire for result, I can free myself from material contamination. In other words, I perform the same activity, but I'm not trying to get the result for myself. If I can do that, then I will be performing the activity that would naturally be karma. It will get the result, I'll see it, you know, mechanical result, but it creates no future results. And so because of that, at some time, just by not producing any more future results, there is no karma, there is no material result. So that means you'll be liberated. You'll be freed from material contamination. Well, not contamination, but you'll be freed from being situated within the material environment. You're still a mundane consciousness, so that's definitely a reaction. But and you'll have to come back to material activities. But in any case, it's a higher level of consciousness, because then you're dealing with naishkarmya. It means you're doing the activity with no desire for any work. Dharma means you're doing the activity with a desire for work. Now, what you do with that result, that defines by your piety. You give in charity, use for yourself, use for others, whatever you do. Artha means you're doing it, but you definitely want the result. Right? And kama is that it's the result's only for you. You're not even willing to share the result so much. Right? Or if it's shared, it's very, very, it's, you know, it's based, you do something, I do something. It's business. Like that. Does that make sense? So what we can see is that the activity is there's less and less. There's less, let me say, the quality of dealing with the result is higher, but the activity is exactly the same. Does that make sense? You do the activity for your own sense gratification, but if you do the same activity for someone else's sense gratification, the activity is the same, but the consciousness is higher because you're sharing it with someone else. You're doing it for someone else's benefit, though on the mundane platform. Then dharma means you're doing the same activity, but now defined by shastra. So you're seeing the laws of God, right? You're actually recognizing the laws of God. While on artha and kama, even though there are laws of God that govern it, you're not necessarily seeing it in that way, because the attachment to the result is so overpowering, you can't let go enough to be able to appreciate. Does that make sense? Then when you work on the platform of moksha, that fourth level of consciousness, then your level of attachment is less again. You know, basically materially not there. At least materially meaning as far as karma goes. Gyan, fully there, but karma, it's not there. So, therefore, but the activity's the same. Right? So what you've done is raise the consciousness. But in raising the consciousness, what's that raising of consciousness? For yourself, for others on the gross material, you know, the platform of sense. My senses, next platform, your senses, next platform, you know, what is the right thing to do for universal harmony? The next thing is, what is the right thing to do to get out of the material world? Meaning, you know, that you have nothing in the material world that you want. So we see is that what your result is changing. Your desire, your consciousness of the result, but the activity doesn't change. Right? Now, and in all of these four, you're getting the results. Right? But we can see is that as the consciousness goes, the results actually is better. You do it for yourself, great. You share it, you get more. You work according to Dharma, greater again. You work according to Naishkarmya, greater again. Right? Because Ravana here is acting, but because of his attachment to the result, he doesn't see the mistake that he's making in dealing with Mother Sita. Right? So that's the point, is one could say, is why would Naishkarma, you produce a greater result because you have no result, you have no attachment to the result for yourself. So you're only functioning on intelligence. Right? So you're very clear exactly what's happening at every moment. And if it's going correct, you continue. If it's not, you immediately adjust it. But on lower levels, the mind is involved because of the attachment. So it may be going wrong, but you won't, your attachment, you'll keep going in that direction. You will make a mistake. Does that make sense? So despite the modern, especially within the devotional society's idea that detachment or renunciation means inferior material benefit, that's their foolishness. It's the exact opposite. People who are successful in the material world at the time of performing the activity are detached. The guy who makes $1 billion, when he actually deals with the elements of his business, he's more detached than the guy who only makes $1 million, or the guy who makes $1,000, or the guy who only makes $10. Because he's only focusing on what it takes to make it work perfectly. That's why he gets better results. And the others going out of, oh, we'll get this result, or maybe what about this, so they're living in the past and the future. But the guy who's a result, he's only dealing in the present. That's why he gets that result. So the higher the consciousness, the more you're able to deal in the present. Right? Now you take this step further, then the ultimate raising in consciousness, and the ultimate of doing something for someone else and not being attached to the result, is doing it for God. Right? So if you do it for the Lord, then that will be the best. So that's why devotional service is the most auspicious. Devotional service gets the best results. Right? Now one may say, well, what about you're doing devotional service, but what you're doing is actually materially wrong. Right? We always have to come up with that, right? It's the Western brain. We have to think like that. We have to find that one exception, you know, out of thousands of options, and then with that say, oh, I found a fault, therefore it's wrong, therefore I'm superior. Right? But the point is the formulas stay the same. You're doing it for God, so ultimately it gets the highest result, but where it's mixed on a lower platform, you will get the results of that mix. That's all. That's why it's called Misra Bhakti, mixed devotional service. So if it's mixed with karma or jnana or whatever element, you'll get the results of that, but both, the positive and the negative. So that's all. You know, a devotee does something that wouldn't be recommended by Shastra, wouldn't even be recommended by modern standards. So the doing it to please Krishna, if he's actually sincere, he'll get the devotional benefit. And material benefit, whatever you can get by performing that sub-quality activity, he'll get that also. But at the same time, what will come with it will be the reactions. Because otherwise, why is he using the lower one? If he's using the lower activity because he doesn't know of anything else, you know what I'm saying? Then that's one thing. But most devotees aren't on that platform. They're not so innocent. So he doesn't know, so he's doing his best for Krishna. So then there will be no reaction because the consummation of his consciousness in Krishna is complete. But if it's not because of his attachment to a particular activity, that degree of consciousness that's invested in that other activity, it will give that result. But because bhakti is the superior level of consciousness, and because you're dealing with Krishna as a person, then Krishna gets personally involved. And so he will remove those attachments. But in removing those attachments, it doesn't mean that necessarily, you know, you're completely materially absorbed in all that and completely disturbed by your mind, and you go to sleep in the morning, you wake up and you're self-realized. It won't necessarily be like that. Removing doesn't necessarily mean that you won't feel the pain of their removal. But they will be removed. Right? So, and having been removed, then you will appreciate that higher level of consciousness as opposed to that lower level of where one was attached on the mundane platform. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the mixed devotional service, if its focus is on Krishna, then we call it karma yoga, jnana yoga, buddhi yoga. Right? We don't look at the weakness of it. We look at the strength. Right? But if the focus is more on the material, right? In other words, our purpose is more on the material than on Krishna, then we call it by its derogatory terms. Karma misra bhakti, jnana misra bhakti. You know, I mean, it's the point. Is the glass half full or half empty? Depends. If it's positive, it's half full. If you're negative, it's half empty. So in other words, if you're looking at it more materially, it will be looked at materially, because that's your view. Krishna reciprocates according to how you surrender. Right? So therefore, devotional service that has these mixes in it is not ideal, but that is connected to Krishna, that makes it worthwhile. And if you're focused more on pleasing Krishna, though one may be still attached or overwhelmed by these lower qualities, it will still be progressive. It will still move forward. Right? But if one's not so sincere, and one has more faith in the mundane, then there's every chance that's where we start talking about the weeds growing and choking the creeper. Right? Because if you're focused on the weeds stay. If you're focused on the creeper, the weeds can be pulled out. Does that make sense? So it's up to us. It is magic that you can take the living entity that is so engrossed in material consciousness and within one lifetime make them purely Krishna conscious. That's magic. But it's not that it's doesn't have a system that it functions by, a logical system that is explained. In other words, it doesn't, because it's magic, doesn't mean it's not science. Right? So just the sentiment, oh, it'll just go away, that's nice, but one should be desiring it to go away. If you say, I chant and so all my material desires go, yes, as long as you're trying to please Krishna and your focus is on Krishna and you're not trying to be distracted by them, then it will go away. If you're just focusing on Krishna, when will all my material desires go away, and that's all you're praying for, they may or may not go away, because the point is to please Krishna, not to get rid of material desires. Right? The impersonalists try to get rid of material desires, because then you can free yourself from material contamination, be liberated. The devotee is trying to please Krishna. Now, if a particular material desire is getting in the way, he may pray about that, but the point is his point is to please Krishna. Not that not having material qualities, that is good in itself. You know, it's just like we're saying, following the Vedic rules, just to follow them, is called pious on the material platform, but it's impious on the spiritual platform. Right? So therefore, being a good person and having all good qualities is useful in connection with Krishna. But if it's not in connection with Krishna, then it's you're the nicest of the materialists, that's all.
Thank you, Maharaj. This is a question about definitions, I think, because I appreciated what you just shared with us. Very much so.
Okay.
When you said when we emphasize the good, we call it karma yoga or jnana yoga, but when you emphasize the bad, we call it karma misra bhakti or jnana misra bhakti.
Right.
I thought the definitions were the opposite, that when you're emphasizing your devotional service to the Lord, but you have some mixed desires, that was higher than just working out your karma and trying to dovetail them.
Okay. Means in the definition it would be, we take it the opposite. In other words, we call it karma yoga because you're trying to connect your activities to Krishna. So your devotional service is focused on the engagement of basically the body, right? In the sense it's in the Lord's service. But its focus is on that. But let's say jnana yoga would mean then you're performing the same services, but your focus is more on the mechanics of how the science of, you know, Shankya and that works. How the Shankya is working within your life, with the modes of nature, within what you're doing, and how that becomes, how by focusing on that you keep yourself less attached to the results and all that. When we say karma misra bhakti, then we're saying is that this aspect of karma is mixed with your devotional service, and therefore it's getting in the way of your devotional service. So they say karma misra bhakti would mean that, okay, your attachment to the results of the activities is getting actually in the way of your performing nice service to Krishna. So we have to analyze that and then see what's wrong there. Because generally, depending on who you're talking to, of course, but Prabhupada generally uses the term karma yoga, jnana yoga, as synonyms for bhakti yoga. But he never uses the terms karma misra that as synonymous. So generally it's used when you're trying to point out the anartha. You know, in other words, if you're analyzing what you're doing and seeing how to connect my material desires to Krishna, that would be the karma yoga or jnana yoga aspect. If you're looking at it and see, okay, how are my material desires actually getting in the way, then that's the karma misra, jnana misra. It means that according to this definition, because generally speaking, it's used traditionally karma misra, jnana misra in more derogatory fashion. Like in Gita, then karma yoga, jnana, used in a positive way, like that. Is that okay? Yes. Okay, last one. Yes.
In the ninth chapter of Bhagavad-gita, it says that by following the rules of the three Vedas, the end result is just birth and death. So my question is, why does it only say three Vedas? Which Veda is excluded?
Atharva.
The Atharva Veda, why?
Atharva is what's left over. In other words, you have the one... Originally, there's only the Atharva Veda. Some will say it's a yajur, depending upon how they're identifying the Veda. But Prabhupada says Atharva Veda. So it includes, means everything that's in the Veda, it's all there. It's one Veda. But because studying that one Veda would be difficult for those in Kali Yuga, because as it is, it's generally 12 years per Veda. So that would be, if you did all four, it would be 48 years, you know. And then you have to be at least 5 years old to start, right? So that's going to put you at 53 when you finish, right? And then when you finish and decide, okay, now I'll get married, it's a bit late. Right? You know, so then he breaks it up and he takes all the means that the all the verses of the Veda are based on these like essential verses which are called riks. Right? So all the riks are taken out and put into one place and that's called the Rig Veda. Then everything that's not so that'll be the riks themselves. Then those that are based on the prose element. They're not based on the riks. Though you can take them back to the rik, but their presentation is not in that form. So that will be the Yajurveda, because that will be like practical application. Rik is for installing the deity, calling the deity, prayers to the deity. The Yajra will be for establishing or setting up the yajna and performing everything. Then the samans will be all the songs that are based on the riks. Then that will be put into one Veda. So then through those three Vedas, the three Veda, then you can perform a Vedic sacrifice. So in other words, the Advarya uses the Yajurveda to arrange the sacrifice and build the fire. The Rigvedi, he's the Hota, he installs the fire and offers everything. And the Samavedi, he is the Advaryu, and he chants the mantras. He chants the prayers that are offered. So between those three, and then a Brahma priest who knows all those three, it's complete. So without knowing the Yajurveda, then a full yajna can be done. But there are also ones that include the Atharva. You can also have ones with four Vedas. So the Atharva then becomes what's left over, what's not included in those other three. And the Atharva includes all the various material knowledge and everything, like that of warfare and medicine and all these other different things. It includes more kind of on the mundane knowledge, while the three Vedas, then they're more on the performance of sacrifice and the demigods and that kind of aspect.
Then why would Krishna say of the Vedas and the Atharva Veda?
No, he says he's the Sama.
Oh, is that
He says he's the Sama.
Oh,
means,
okay.
In other words, of the four Vedas, then the Rig, Yajra, and Sama, that's Krishna. That's more important. But of the Rig, Yajra, and Sama, Krishna's Sama. You know, and then of Sama, then he's Brihat Sama and Rohinya. Those verses are like the most pleasing to the Lord. Okay. But even if there is something where he's saying he's Atharva, that doesn't mean the separated off Atharva Veda. It means Atharva meaning the whole Veda. In other words, he is knowledge. Veda is all knowledge. So he is all knowledge. So in that way you could say he's Atharva. But that doesn't mean the Atharva of four Vedas. That means the Atharva meaning the original that includes all four. Does that make sense? So from either way it would work out the same. Okay, so we'll end here. Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janyatai Gaura Premanandhi.
Are the three Vedas related to the Vastutraya?
Are the three Vedas related to the Vastutraya? As you could say, Rig would be Sambandha, Yajra would be Abhideya, Sama would be Prayojana. Because if you install the deity or establish the deity with Rig, the performance of activities are done with Yajur, and then the goal or the prayers and the pleasure is with Sama. Same time, one could also say that one could look at it the other way, is that since in the Yajna once the Rig is started to use, you're not using the Yajra anymore. So you could say that the Yajra is what you set up with and creates the field, the environment, because the whole Yajna is set up that way. Then having called the deity with the Rig, so which will still be Sambandha, then you'll go into performance of the Yajna with that. You'll continue with that. So that means then the Hota is the one who is performing the activity. So that will make that aspect the Abhideya and the Yajra the Sambandha. But Sambandha in the way of field, the Yajra Rig will still be in the way of establishing the relationship. Is that okay? The Sama will always stay in his position because it's the goal, so God's the goal, so always therefore he's the Sama.
There are many processes which focus on the goal.
Many processes which focus on the goal.
Or which recommend people to just focus on the goal or even pray.
But there would be a process that wouldn't have a goal included?
Mm-hmm.
What do you say process? Process means you're interacting with material, you're operating material energy so that there's a transformation, so that you get a result. Process means there's something that you take an item, and through the process it's transformed into something else. So process would include result.
I mean to say that there are worldly recommended ways of achieving success.
Worldly recommended ways of achieving success.
No, just like money.
Worldly recommended ways of achieving success. Quite, it has a good ring to it. You could probably put that on a website, you know. See, yeah.
Like just focusing on the result, or praying for the result, or visualizing the result, and as a way of following.
That's three. So you're only concerned with those three.
I think that those three describe the generic of it.
Okay, so you're taking all the different process, all the different success methods, and bringing them down to focusing on the result, praying for the result, and what was the last one?
Visualizing
the result. Okay.
And in effect of following those methods, people experience immediate results or astounding.
And that when you say people, it means which people?
Both devotees and non-devotees.
Okay, but do all devotees or all people get their success? You know what I'm saying? Because if it was successful, why is there another book written? In other words, it may work for some, but doesn't work for others. You understand? This is the point, because you can say it works, but at the same time, as it works Someone who's involved in these self-help methods or success methods, there's a good chance they've been through a few of them. Just like you said, if you're saying these three represent, you feel the whole gamut of them, that means you have looked into quite a few of them. Right? Because by saying they represent means you've looked at more than three. But my point is no one is looking at just one. Right? You might have someone who is very fortunate, looks at one, gets a success from the one. Right? You know what I mean? Specifically, you know, Buddhist Mayavadis, that's their thing, it's from the one, right? But others, they have a tendency to look at many. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, what is happening is that there's a complete process, because process doesn't mean there's one thing. Here, when they say that you have a particular process, it means in your process you're focusing on specifically one thing. Right? Because according to Yudhishthira Maharaj, there's not going to be any success unless you focus. Right? So now in the Vedic concept, you focus on the whole range of the process. But in the modern one, they won't understand this full range, because that only basically comes from the Vedic literatures. And only if one's actually God-conscious do you actually see how it works. Right? You know, it's like Gita. If you're not God-conscious, you can't actually understand what the Gita's teaching. Right? You can get a few things out of it, but you'll never get the complete process. You know, you can get this or you can get this. So that's what's happened, is because people aren't seeing the laws of God in relationship to God as a person to please Him. They may be God-fearing people, but they're not following this to actually please God. Right? So therefore, they're only seeing a part of it. Right? And seeing a part, it still works, because it's still God's process. It still has some effect, because there's focus. So that's why they have their little sayings. Right? Any of these processes, generally they have a little saying, or a point that you can focus on. Right? And so by that focus, then when you make your endeavor, then there'll be results. Right? So how well they're able to create that focus by their presentation, by their little phrases, and by their definitions, by their charts that they make, you know, by the examples that they give, all this is their expertise in creating focus. It's not that his system is better because it has a better presentation. It's still part of God's system. It's just that he's understood better how to create focus. Then you're able to apply it. So in that way you could say, yes, it's better. But mechanically it's not necessarily. Because focus is not mechanics. Focus is an element necessary, but focus is something you have to do, right? Does that make sense? So they create this. That's the one thing. So they create the focus. Now, why I mentioned that they go to many before one starts to work for them, and if they're fortunate enough, one does work, because when they focus on that one, they automatically do the other parts of the process, right? If you just focus on the goal. Now, the person who's goal-oriented, right? You know what I'm saying? What would be the nature of someone who's goal-oriented? He'd be a very active person, right? Right? Because he's following the process. He's always active. In other words, abhideya is always happening. And what about, since he's always active, what does that say about his identity? His analyzation of the field. That's also there. He's confident, he knows who he is, he knows what he's working with, he knows what, you know, what to do. He just sometimes is not so focused on the result. He gets so focused on these other things that he forgets that there's a result you're trying to get from it. So you focus him on the result, he will do the other two. Sambandha and Abhideya will happen. Therefore, he's successful. And they say, wow, this is a great system, you know, just focus on the result and things like that. Okay? Now you said the others, then same similar kind of thing where you pray for the result. Right? Now, in praying, that means you just sit there and then suddenly the television comes crashing into your ceiling and just bang, lands there right in front of you. And then another hole comes in the ceiling and the remote lands in your hand and then you just push the button and it starts and that's how it works. Yeah? Is that what they're meaning by you pray? Right? No, that's the, what do you call it? Let go, let God. Why? Now, what's the important thing here? Of course, let God. So they're bringing in an element that the result's not depending upon you. But why are they saying that? What's the problem in their process? No, they're endeavoring. What's the first half of the phrase? Let go means he's endeavoring so much and thinking that I'm going to get this to happen that he's over-endeavoring. He's micromanaging. So things that will go on their own, he's getting involved in messing them up. So relax a little bit. In other words, he's so attached to the goal, right, that he's trying to, that he's going to get it, right? So therefore, he has to step back a little bit, become a little bit more detached, right? Depend upon, and then this way, depend upon the Lord rather than just say, oh, it'll happen automatically. Some will just say it happens. They don't even bother with the prayer part. But it's the same principle. Is that element of detachment, well, is the mechanics, right? But, because if you depend upon God, then that makes it more dynamic. Because even if you don't deserve so much, God may give you more. The other one, you just get what you deserve, right? So in other words, he also knows who he is, what he wants, and he's active. So therefore he endeavors. So both of these, the problem is in Prayojana. But the Sambandha and Abhideya are nicely in place, right? Okay, then you have what you mentioned is, what do you say, the attraction. Is that? You said another word. Visualization. So visualization means what? It's intelligence. Right? So the visualization will mean that, what is he trying to visualize? A goal. So why does he have to visualize it? The other two don't have to visualize it. Why? To get focused. Okay, so it means the point is in all of these guys to get focused, then they have their point they're focusing on. But I'm saying, why does he have to visualize? No, or let's say, what's his weakness? The other two's weakness is that they get distracted from the goal because they're so busy in the process. Right? So they're either, but so what's, so you remove that distraction, and then it comes. So what's the visualizationist's weakness? Proper desire. And then what happens from proper desire? If desire is focused, what happens? Action. No, but why does action come? You get involved with the field, but there's something you have to touch on before the mind will agree to taking part. You're touching the prayojana. In other words, if you visualize, then you'll get attached to the goal, which these other two guys already are. Right? But his weakness is he doesn't have a strong identity, doesn't understand the field, and is doing nothing. So, yeah. So this is to solve that problem. It's not that he's not willing to do something. He's not doing anything because he doesn't know what to do. Right? Because he's not sure of his goal. You know what I'm saying? The other guys know their goal, but they get distracted by their process and forget the goal, therefore goal-oriented, or they're so attached to their goal and are working so hard to get it that they won't let it happen. You know, it's just like the milk, you put the milk on the fire and it will boil, but you're trying to do something and open the lid and close the lid and turn the fire and do all kinds of things. You don't have to do any of that. Leave it alone. It'll happen. Right? It's God's laws. It'll happen. You know, you're doing the right process. You understand? So they don't have a weakness here. Their identity is strong. Their action is strong. They have problems with the goal. Right? Then, but this person, even though they are willing to be active and they're intelligent, they're not. They don't have a goal. They don't know what they can get from what's there. So therefore, visualize means visualize what? From where? Where do you get the visualization from? You make it up? Right? Yeah, it means in other words, what is available in your environment? Right? You choose something, and then you visualize that, that visualization will turn into attachment, right? Krishna says in Gita, by contemplating the objects of the senses, attachment develops. Right? Attachment's your prayojan. That's your, does that make sense? So the person will be motivated once they that visualization is really focused. If they just visualize and stop, it didn't turn into need, so there'll be no action, so they won't get it. And they'll say, oh, the process doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? But they're focused on that. Right? So in other words, it won't work for the lazy person. You know, it may work for the lazy person if he focuses enough, because then he'll get attached, then he will do something. But the point is he focuses, right? So therefore you get that, you know, that visualization, that comes, that law of attraction, all these different things, is that you think about it enough, you'll attract it to you. How do you attract it to you? Because the goal comes, and then that's what you want, so you make the endeavor. It's not that you just sit there and like a magnet, all these things start coming in, you know, your Bentley into the window and this and that, and you know, the neighbor's house comes over and nudges yours out of the way, and then you're sitting in his house. You know, too bad he can't nudge it the other way, then he'd be sitting in your house, at least it's, you know, a fair trade. You know, otherwise he's sitting in an empty lot, you're sitting in his house, and then your neighbor gets, you know, your house and his house get crunched together and all that. But maybe he gets benefit, he gets two houses, maybe, or something, you know, like that. So, you know what I'm saying? It's not like that. It means the process is going on. Everything is happening. Does this make sense? So, yeah. Does that make sense? So now, but there is something else you have left out when you say these represent everything. But it's not one that's known very much because it's not a popular one. But it's generally used by those who are successful. The ones that are consistently successful, what they continue on. That's your strategic planning. Analysis of the field, what you can do with it to make the plans, what you go. So they kind of look at the whole thing. But the focus is on the analysis. Because it's strategic planning. It means once they've planned it, they will do it. You know what I'm saying? So that's my point. That's their thing, is they look at what's there and then they do. They will get their result. That's not their problem. And they have that because they can analyze, they know that it will come with time. And so this is what's used by like your armed forces and that. You know? And others who have that kind of understanding in business and that, they'll make a plan like that. Because it's not the attachment to the result that is their drive. You know, it's basically operating the field. That's their taste. You know what I'm saying? But they don't have any problems with the goal like the other two did. Right? So the point is in here is that unless the field is understood, you know, then there's also, you would say it is visualization, they get to that, but then there's also an element. Now all this that we've discussed are people who are confident and are active. What about someone who's not confident? You have to create confidence. You have to create the enthusiasm. So that means what? You have to create an identity. Therefore, you know, all this, you're born rich, you're, you know, poor, rich dad, poor dad. It's all how you think. It's your mentality. You think successful, you'll be successful. You think you're not, then you won't be. Because they don't have an identity. Once they have the identity, then they'll do all the other parts of the thing. They'll do an action, they'll get a result. But the problem is depending on the particular mentality, depending upon the situation, then there may be a weakness in any of these four areas. Right? So the Vedic system is, you look at all the four areas together. You know the field, you analyze the field. Right? Then you can see you're inspired to perform an activity in the field. You know what goal you want, you make the endeavor. Right? So all four are there. But just doing that without understanding God, you won't be there. You'll be successful, but not that successful. Because the point is that the dynamism of that is because it's God's laws. So as you connect this to God, then it becomes active. Very dynamic. Otherwise, it's just a set of definitions that you kind of know how, but you have to apply it. And so where are you going to get the ability to apply it, since ability comes from God? So unless you have the piety that your mundane ability will do it, then, you know, you get something. But the point is, if you're God conscious, right, you're trying to do this for God, then you'll, then since all this is God, you'll understand how it applies in the situation you're in. Sorry? Yeah, you'll be able to go beyond your material ability. You know, that's how you have, you know, some devotees who are just hippies, and then they're going and talking to, you know, members of the of parliament and government and very famous people and powerful people. They don't have the material qualifications to do that, but because they sincerely wanted to do that for Prabhupada, they're doing it. Right? But all those elements are there. They have the result, to please Krishna, to please Prabhupada, right? Then they know who they are. We're devotees. We're servants of Prabhupada. Like that. They see a field. Okay, in this field we could approach these people and then they can do something for Krishna consciousness. Right? They make their plan. They make the endeavor. It works. Right? So the point is that the devotee who's God conscious, in line with your question before, he will be the most successful. So, in other words, you could have someone who's devotional, doesn't understand these formulas, is not very materially successful. You can have someone who understands more of these formulas and they'll be more materially successful, but they won't be necessarily very advanced in devotional service. But someone who is devotional and therefore follows these laws of the Lord, then they'll be both successful and Krishna conscious. You understand? Because if you're Krishna conscious, you can understand what level of success is useful. Right? So you might find a lower level of success works better for you in Krishna conscious, while someone else, a higher level, works better for you. Does that make sense? So the point is that there is nothing that modern field of knowledge has that we don't have. Because knowledge, if it's actual knowledge that works, is actually comes from the Veda. Because Veda means knowledge. So if it's working, it's because actually it's Veda. But because people don't see its connection to the Vedas or its connection to the Lord, therefore it's called avidya or ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? So you take, does that make sense? So that's the point, is the devotee sees it in a relation to the Lord. Therefore, that's how the devotee is able to dovetail everything. But when he dovetails it, it doesn't smell modern. The fragrance is not there, because the modern fragrance is, it doesn't have a connection with God. But I am connecting with God. I'm so smart. I'm connecting this point that's not connected with God to God. Well, what's that? You know, of course, it's modern thinking, but it's atheistic thinking. So, that you've connected to God, great, you'll get the benefit for that. But now, if you then have serving that, and you become more absorbed in that devotion and connecting to God, then your attachment for that thing will wane, and then you'll only use it how much it's useful. But if it's not, you're thinking, see, I'm connecting this to God, and this is so nice. But then your emphasis is on your ability to connect something that you think isn't connected to God, but you connected it. So there's a lot of false ego there. So that false ego will create problems, because you have to give up the false ego at some point if you want to go back to Godhead. You don't want to go back to Godhead, hey, you don't, no need to give it up. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is it will get in the way, because the point is it has come from the Veda. So if it has come from the Veda, why wouldn't you interpret it according to how the Veda would interpret it? Right? Because the point is the knowledge works. It's God's law. It's God's material energy. So therefore the law will function in his material energy. So see it from that point, without the attachment to the modern situation. Does that make sense? That's dovetailing. Because dovetailing means you catch the fish without getting wet. But if you become overwhelmed by those material needs, you become wet. So you caught the fish, but you got wet. And for a lot of devotees, they don't even catch the fish. They just fall in and get wet. So they're talking all this materialism, but they don't even have anything. Right? The family life is miserable. They don't have money. They don't have position. They don't have, you know, authority or influence. So what's the use of it? You know what I'm saying? What's the use? You know, it's like that Brahmin who was so thirsty, and the only place around the approach was this Muslim's house, and he asked for some water to drink. Now, by drinking water from this Muslim, he loses his caste. At least he doesn't die, but he loses his caste. But the Muslim went into the house, but he only had a half a glass of water. That's all he had in the house. So, you know, the Brahmin drank it, and then he's lamenting that I lost my caste, and I didn't even satisfy my thirst. So, then they're losing Krishna by going, being so absorbed in their material lifestyle, and they're not even getting anything materially. Now, that's sad. That's sad. Especially if you go back in history and see they were a very prominent person in the preaching mission, then it becomes even more sad. You know, it's one thing, they were prominent there, then they go out, and they're very successful there. Okay, so then, you know, they're working it out, they'll work it out. But here it's like they had neither. It's like, that's sad. So and it's really sad is because they think success is doing the opposite of Krishna consciousness. But that's impersonalism. Impersonalism means materialism is one thing, Krishna consciousness is the exact opposite. No, in a reflection, it's the same thing, same mechanics. You know what I'm saying? You want to touch, you know, this point on your head in the mirror, you have to touch it in reality. It's the same process. So the point is it works because of its connection with the Lord. The reflection works because of the connection with the Lord. You don't connect it to the Lord, it doesn't work. Because what's reflected is the spiritual world. Right? We think this is the, you know, means here is the spiritual world, but we think the material manifestation is the spiritual world. We think it's eternal and full of happiness. Right? These are the two, it's called Brahma or illusion. Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. So Vaikuntha Brahma means I think it's eternal. And Ananda Brahma means I think it's happiness. Okay? Now what happens when Sambandha and Prayojana are in place? Yeah, they're in place. Abhideya. So now if the Vaikuntha Brahma is there, you think the material world is eternal. And Ananda Brahma is there, that my endeavors in the material world, or it means the material world can give me happiness. What's the next step? Yeah, you do material endeavor. Right? Now, if I understand dukkhalayam ashashvatam, the material world is a place, is temporary, and a place of misery, then what's the next step? Yeah, okay, the positive would be you do something devotional, which is also, you know, not material. But at least in the minimum is you don't get involved in the material. Right? Because it's temporary, it doesn't give any happiness, so you don't get involved materially. But the spiritual actually is eternal, and it's actually the source of happiness, pleasing Krishna. Therefore, you do devotional activity. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Is the abhideya, you don't have to means abhideya is application of focus. Right? In other words, and then the result will come. Focus means you see what is the field, who am I in the field, what results you can get. Right? And therefore, what would be the process? All that being understood, that's called focus. Right? And when there is the inspiration to be involved, that's complete. Does that make sense? It's complete. Then focus is full. Then the endeavor will be complete, and then you'll get whatever result is due.
Maharaj, you tell in the beginning of the class, you tell the more important is not follow the rules, you know, please Krishna. Well, the normal is follow the rules for please Krishna. So the maturity, I think, the maturity of the devotees, we follow the rules for follow only. I remember this story about the gopis, when the Brahmana asked to everybody, please you give me the dust from your feet, because Krishna have a headache and he needs this dust, no? And nobody going to give because it's not follow the rules. And so the gopis tell, we can go to the jail, but we want to please Krishna and we give the dust for him, no? And I think so many times the devotees tell me, oh, for what you make this place for Lord Nisimhadev? In this time you can chant your japa, you can make another thing. Why you lost your time taking flowers, taking tulasis, etc.? I mean, so many times I think I prefer they think I am big demon, but make this service for Lord Nisimhadev than moment. But in the last time also, I stay in very, very bad situation, my mental. Entonces, I don't know why, I won't ask to you, why I stay so very, very bad, very, very bad, my mental, my spiritual life and everything fall down. I fall down so much. I stay in English, but I stay in this. Very, very down, very down. No? Yeah, I don't understand why, no? And Padayani Prabhu asked me, what happened with your Balaram, no? I tell him, Balaram, a little problem now is very good, but it's not Balaram, it's me. I think I have one demon inside, no? I don't know, but I should like know why. Perhaps you can know, because you know me very good. Perhaps you can tell me why I stay so horrible situation, no? You don't know, very horrible situation.
Can anyone translate? Yeah, well, that, of course, there's a wide range of topics, but the problem is I'm not catching. I caught rules and regulations, Krishna, gopis, dust, Nrisimhadev, demon, fall down, but that doesn't, to me, it's not cohesive, so I couldn't.
Yeah, she's talking about the ways of the Brahmanas. They really renounce, no caring about giving out everything for Krishna. I don't know which is the connection between this, and because he is in a disturbed mental state. So I don't know which is the connection.
I didn't quite catch that there's something to do with she's doing some service for the Nrisimhadev and everybody else is saying she could be chanting japa.
Because of the rules and regulations.
But what rules and what regulations are being referred to?
I think that she's referring that our sadhana, regular sadhana, is to chant japa at this time.
Okay.
She's collecting flowers and tulasis at this time of japa.
Okay, but then the point is pujaris are also doing service to the deities at that time.
Yeah.
It's just that maybe you can't see them, so you don't think about them. So, and I understand the point is that if you're doing your service for Krishna, that's the time to do it, then that's when it's done. If it could be done at another time, then of course you can make that adjustment. Is that... You know, so I mean, it's just a matter of it's puja for the deities. It goes on at that time, and so it's done at that time.
Yeah, maybe it's because of her choice.
I don't know. I don't know if it's like you could pick tulsi or those flowers at another time or whatever it is. I'm not sure what's the detail.
Maybe not, because these offerings for Lord Nrisimhadev is at this time. So the time for collecting these flowers and tulsis, it must be
in the morning.
Yeah.
So then. The point is why does that mean rules and regulations? There's rules and regulations for everything. Just like, let's say you want to drive your car, there's rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. But now whether you should be driving your car now, that's another consideration of rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. You know, or where you should be driving your car. So on all these is that you have your general sadhana, but if you're doing puja at that time, that's the time to do it. So then your chanting would be at another time. You know, so now, but if the question is whether she should be doing puja or chanting, then that's another thing. But then what are the considerations? You know, and saying, why would you be taking that perspective? You know, so the thing is...
Sorry, Maharaj. Es que they tell me, I stay in very down mental situation because I don't chant properly my japa.
Oh, okay. So now if it comes between doing puja and doing japa, then japa would definitely be a preference. You know, japa is generally considered to be, that is the process. The pancharatra is the support of japa. So it's just a matter of if you can only do japa or do the puja, better to do the japa. But if you can arrange to do them both, then do both. You know, in other words, if you can do your japa nicely whenever you do it and do that service for Nrisingadev, then that's fine. But the point is the chanting should go nicely. But the point is if you can arrange to chant at another time of the day properly, then you can do both. But if you can't, then better chanting.
Maharaj, can you explain how Aniruddha understood as mind, Pradyumna as intelligence, and Sankarsana as ego corresponds to Sambandha Vijaya Prayojana?
How they correspond.
Yeah, how
How do they correspond?
How they connect.
Okay, so in the field of activity, means you have to understand what is the field. You have to analyze the field, and then from that you know what's the field, you know, have the knowledge of the field, you know what's right and wrong to be performed in that field, right? You know what results you can get, you know everything about it, who's who you are, everything like that. So now, so that's Sankarshan, because Sankarshan is establishing proper religious principles, right? But those religious principles are based upon the time, place, and circumstance. Who's there? What's to be done? Right? Does that make sense? So you're removing, destroying the demons, establishing the devotees. So that's Sankarshan. Prajumna would mean attraction. Right? Prajumna is also the Lord of Intelligence. So you're talking about attraction and intelligence combined. Right? So it's not attachment. Because attachment is mind. It's not intelligence. Right? So Aniruddha is the mind. He's the result. Because what are you attached to? The result. Right? And that is where the mind is. So when the mind wants something, then there's endeavor. So only when you're attracted to something, right, then there's that endeavor that gets you that result. And performing the activity, that's the where all of it's pulled together, that's Vasudev. Because Vasudev he's the Leela avatar. He performs pastimes. And he has all the qualities that all the others have. Vasudev is Abhideya. Vasudev is the combination of everything. Right? In other words, you have the field of the false ego, you know, which would be Sankarshan. You have the which includes the body, you know, that's the field. Then you have Aniruddha's the mind, right? And Prajumna is the intelligence and senses. So in an endeavor, in Abhideya, all those are combined. That's why Vasudeva is the center of Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudeva. He's the central. All the others they have the qualities, they have their inherent qualities, but all their qualities are present in Vasudev.
Help.
Why can the mind enjoy the activity? Because the point is that you perform something, is there not a result of the something in the moment? So therefore, that can be enjoyed. That's your shorter goals. Your shorter experience is the shorter goal. And then there's the end goal. But you'll find is that the experience of the activity is longer than the experience of gaining the goal. Gaining the goal is only when you get it, it removes the anxiety of not having it. So it's only a moment that's there. And then it's gone. Well, the experience can be gained the whole way. You know what I'm saying? So that's why the activity is the most important. It includes everything else, and it gives that longer happiness. But the point is since the goal is for the Lord's pleasure, therefore during the activity the Lord is pleased. You know what I'm saying? But you have the activity being the medium, this is a specific goal you're trying to get. But he's pleased in the process also. Yes, pleasing him is always present. It's an ongoing activity because it's in the present. It's not that I'll please in the future, but when does future come? Because future stays in future, past stays in past, present is in present. So, as Lord Brahma points out, in Goloka there is no future and no past. It's always directly in contact with Krishna. The difference between renunciation and sannyas. Yes. Yes, serving now. Yes, so that in that way you could say all the residents of Vrindavan are perfectly situated in the topmost platform of sannyas. Yes. Yes. That's the real purpose of sannyas.
Can you explain also, maybe on this auspicious day, our movement is, how to say, expansion of pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. How is it that all not successful things are happening to our movement?
Why are non-successful things happening to our movement, even though our movement is an expansion of the Lord's pastimes? So where it's not successful, are devotees seeing it as expansion of the Lord's pastimes? No, it means it's not supposed to go, I don't know. This is not like a avant-garde ending of a movie. You just go, well, maybe, you know, options. That's prajumna. Right? Point is think about it. What's not successful? You say, if you're saying something's not successful, it means you have something in mind. Right? Means, in other words, if you say something's not successful, you have something that you're thinking is not successful. So why is it not successful? What's not successful? Expected results of devotional activities. And what are the expected results? In terms of preaching, okay. And what do you expect to happen from preaching? We should be able to maintain what we're given. What have you been given? This means you have to turn that on.
I tried to link with Srila Prabhupada's statement that often we can hear critic of our movement that we were not able to maintain what Srila Prabhupada given to us in terms of rapid development and enthusiasm and dedication.
So we're not able to maintain dedication, enthusiasm, and
rapid development,
rapid expansion. We're not able to maintain that. Means the point is it's, if someone is, in other words, why would one somebody be enthusiastic, right? According to this formulas, he contemplates what's there and what you can get, right? So in other words, if you contemplate what facilities we have for preaching Krishna consciousness and what are the benefits of preaching Krishna consciousness, you would be enthused. So if someone's not enthused, they're not contemplating this. It's simple. Right? So those who are carrying on the legacy. Those who aren't, they're not. But the point is any living entity can be enthused in Krishna consciousness. So it's just a matter of doing it. Does that make sense? Another one of the, you could say, your self-help phrases, right? Just do it. Okay? So, there, what was the other? You said enthusiasm. Ben? He always says three things, right? Ben? So it's like Madhva was two. Okay. But the thing, when he raises his hand, he only puts up two. But that's more of a Hungarian thing, I think. Hungarians more is they always go two. Question, you do it. Two fingers, right? That's that. That's Hungarian, or that's how the Russians taught the Hungarians? Hmm? I know they always use that, but I'm saying it's a local custom, or it's the Russians trained you like that? Material energy and the living entity. Hmm? But then, see, Madhvacharya would mean this way. But you always do it this way. You know, so then that also brings out the, what do you call it? Austro-Hungarian Empire, because this, you know, this kind of thing, you know, that aspect. So it must be something to do. Also, whether you're making a point or you're giving a result back, you know, it means they've made their point, now you're making yours. That's this way. If you're making a new point or an inquiry, then it's this way. Like you see on the Back to Godhead, then Prabhupada's using the mudra this way. You know, that means he's making a point. And then if somebody, having made your point, then they're commenting on your point, they'll use this way. So generally they say this way, so then they're always trying to make a point, I guess. Right? And so yours is. That's also the Boy Scouts, they do that. You know, so it's good, be nice, and everything. So, what's the next point? Rampant development. Rapid development. Point is if processes fall, focus is there, processes fall, development happens. Processes not followed, then results don't come. But that comes back to that focus. You understand what you're trying to do. That's the two. What was the third? That enthusiasm. Dedication. Okay, so dedication means that you actually think Krishna consciousness is the process over material. So if you understand that Krishna consciousness, what Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra says, that is where you get, then you can focus on what this mission can do for you, then you can get your results of development. So much of the time weakness comes that devotees aren't necessarily convinced that Krishna consciousness will solve all their problems. They'll think it will solve some of them, but not all of them. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of individuals that are committed, then take it a step further, contemplate, and are inspired, they'll do something, they'll get a result. And individuals are not, they'll get less. So whatever is the focus in these areas, then there'll be result. You know what I'm saying? That's why you go from one temple to another, one's more successful than the other, or within a temple, one individual more than another. You know, or just someplace out in the middle of nowhere, you have one person and they're doing so many things. It's just a matter. So development is according to their ability, then they can do things. And if you connect your ability to Krishna, then you have your ability plus Krishna's blessings. If you don't connect it to Krishna, you only have what's your ability, what you deserve according to karma. Did you have a different flower on your ear earlier? Going to say is that it was on the other ear and it was like red. Now, it was on that same ear, but it was bigger. Yeah, it was bigger also. Now you have a smaller one. So, it means as time goes, it just shrinks or it gets smaller or something, changes color. Or, it was a swap. Okay. I was thinking, because I was saying, wait a minute, that was a different color. Okay. Then from Kerala. For those pursuing as their goal the impersonal aspect or the Paramatma aspect of the Lord, now the process of Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana apply if the factor relationship is not there. Okay, so it means, in other words, someone's endeavoring after impersonalism, you know, and Paramatma. It means either the Brahman or the Paramatma aspect. And so, would it still have the same element of Sambandha Abhideya and Prayoja? It would still remain, because anything you're doing, because Sambandha means you would have to have an identity of who you are, what is the concept of God, and what is your and material energy. Based on that, then you're going to have a process, and then you're going to have a goal that's gained. So then it's just a matter of their definitions won't be so developed, that's all. So they understand the soul is Brahman, okay, they understand the Supreme is Brahman, but they don't know anything more about the Supreme. And they generally will then think that means if they think the material energy is also Brahman, then they're actual impersonalists. There's not so much inconsistency. It's just not so developed. Because if you're Brahman, God's Brahman, material energy is Brahman, then that is, it's all Brahman. You understand? Mayavadis and Buddhists will say, I'm Brahman. The Supreme's Brahman, but the material energy's illusion. So then their statement of everything's Brahman isn't true, because they don't believe that. Because where did illusion come from? Because the illusion would also have to be Brahman if everything's Brahman. So they're not real impersonalists. Right? Right? Because Buddhism is atheistic. because it doesn't actually understand. Impersonalist is not atheistic. He's just on the lowest level of God realization. While a Buddhist is atheistic because they don't believe in God, because they don't actually have void is not Brahman. It's just there's nothing. So you're nothing, you know, God's nothing, but the illusion is an illusion, but somehow or another it is a change in, or a covering, or a transformation of nothing. So where did that come from? But at the same time, as they'll say, it's illusion, so it's not there. But then that is meaning that we are nothing is substance. But how can nothing be substance? You understand? So there's nothing consistent about the philosophy. But, and so then you take a whole, you know, how you say, a large amount of Buddhists, right? And so if you want to bring them to the Vedic, because from the Vedic then you can get them to the actual understanding of the culture, then what's going to be difficult is because there's no specific culture. Right? Technically speaking, there is no Buddhist culture as such, other than you just live under a tree, you just live anywhere, and at a certain time of the day you beg, and the rest of the time you just absorb yourself in this nothingness. That's it. That is the culture. So anything else they have is either just taken from the Vedic, because that happens to be what was around before they came along, or they've created it. Right? So now, therefore, without much, so what's going to be easily understandable by them is the philosophy. Because if you push the culture, they'll say, well, that's Vedic. And the Buddhist will say, why I should follow the Vedas. Buddha rejected the Vedas. So you can't culturally approach them. You have to approach them philosophically. So now, if you want them to follow the Vedas, then you would have to find something in the Vedas that seems similar to what they're talking about. Therefore, instead of emptiness, you have Brahman. Right? But you actually keep the same philosophy. Instead of you're nothing, you know, the Supreme is nothing, and then the material energy is illusion, then you say, I'm Brahman, God's Brahman, and the material energy is illusion. You understand? So it's the same philosophy. That's why we say Mayavadis are actually Buddhists by philosophy. But the basis of their voidistic principle is the Vedas. Well, the Buddhists don't accept the Vedas. So that way they're not, from that definition, they're not atheistic. But from their not actually understanding what the Veda is saying and misapplying it, then they're atheists. Like that. Because they don't understand is that if you're Brahman and I'm Brahman and everything, and we're all Brahman, then that means also what you call illusion is Brahman. You know, so it exists, it's Brahman. But they say it doesn't exist. So does this make sense? So So they still have to have the same process, just that their process is faulty. But a real Brahmavadi will understand it's all Brahman, so I'm not seeing things. So my process is to see everything in relationship to Brahman. And then my goal will be, is one will be situated in that consciousness where one is always seeing everything as Brahman. You know, the Paramatma, as you understand, is he is the controller of everything. He is the one we are Brahman, part and parcel of Paramatma. He is the ultimate, you know, cause of everything. So therefore, then we try to bring ourselves in line on that same spiritual platform in quality as the Lord by not being absorbed in the material and being absorbed in the Lord. And so then from that, they can either take up devotional service, go from mystic cities, or merge into the Lord.
From the purely nihilistic...
Go ahead. Last one. Then we'll go.
From the purely nihilistic conception...
From the?
Purely nihilistic conception. The Buddhist.
Pure?
Purely nihilistic.
Purely theistic.
Nihilistic.
Buddhist.
From the Buddhist point of view.
Nihilistic.
Yeah, nihilistic.
Okay.
So there could not really be an impetus for activity because everything is nothing, there's no goal.
No, it's like that in all of them. That's why we say it's not consistent. The nihilist, then he'll say that it's all illusion, so everything's nothing and the goal is nothing. So why would you do anything? So that will be the basis on why they don't get involved in regular day-to-day, what we call normal activities, right? So they don't go out and get themselves a job or this or that or, you know, family life and all these things. So you generally see as in its normal state, your Buddhists and your Mayavadis are all monks. But then they do have a process by which they will come to that platform. But then if the process itself can get you there, it means the process itself has substance. But you're dealing with illusion. So how does it have any substance? So their own philosophy defeats themselves. But the point is that they still want to elevate themselves out of the material world because they've seen material endeavor and its results don't give any happiness, right, or anything lasting. So then the next thing is get rid of it, right? But what they're holding on to, while we'll say, you know, the mundane element, you know, that binds it to the material world, is they're still trying to control the material energy to get a situation in which they will be the enjoyer. Because they say you'll be happy on the level of Brahmananda or happy on the level of, you know, whatever it is, mu, you know, like that. So does that mean that cows are like the greatest professors of this voidist philosophy? Okay, because the only thing that they say is moo. What's the connection? Okay, so there's been quite a few today that I've said and everyone sat there and not caught. Moo, M-U, that's the Buddhist term for nothingness. So your Zazen, where you're trying to come to that point of nothingness, that state is called mu. Right? But the interesting thing is the Chinese can't digest cow's milk. So there's been some offense. So they have not understood the proper understanding of mu. That's why they're into soy. They don't have the enzymes to digest milk. So that's why they're into soy and tofu and all. So there's something, so you can't find a direct connection here. There's something wrong. Hitting that, yeah. The point is that it's not complete because you want to be the controller and enjoyer. Because to understand Vaishnavism means you have to give up the desire for controlling and enjoying. That's what the Prabhupada's talking about, the spirit of Gita. Krishna is the Supreme Lord, I'm his servant. Only then you can actually understand, because otherwise the desire to control and enjoy will get in the way of understanding. Right? Just like a very attached person to something, you're talking to them logically about their attachment and the difficulties, they can't hear it because they are the controller and enjoyer. So that's the thing. So as you reduce that, so devotee means he accepts the principle that I'm not the controller and enjoyer. Therefore, it opens the door for him actually understanding God and devotional service.